Hello and welcome to the Pick Six podcast. We are back in the middle of July, and that voice that you hear to begin the show is not John Niatawa. He is on vacation, a well-earned vacation. This is Sam McEwen. And I'm not flying solo today. I'm with Evan Bland, who is one of our Husker beat writers.
Yeah, I'm no John, but I'm here.
No, you're not. Let's do it. That's right. Don't forget it. Neither am I, so that helps. We've been gone for a while because all of us, in some way or another, have been on vacation. And even though Nebraska football never, and I mean ever, slows down, there's never a quiet moment or a dull week. In Nebraska football, we still have to get some time away. This is your first extended vacation since taking the job at the World Herald. Was it good to get away from the beast that is Nebraska football before you take the deep and unforgiving plunge that's about to begin?
Oh, any colorful metaphor will do. Breath of fresh air, any of those cliches. Yes, it was amazing to get away for a couple weeks and just know that on a given weeknight, I didn't have to worry about it.
Right.
So, it was good to get away, but it also kind of serves to re-energize and get you back and ready for the season. So, yeah, let's do this thing.
Well, for me, you try to take your vacation so it coincides with Riley taking his and the coaches leaving. And for the first week that I was on it, it was actually hard for me to disengage. So I had to take the Twitter app off my phone, Facebook app off my phone.
Nice.
Off. Because I want to get away, completely away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gotten to the point, especially toward the end, if I hadn't gotten to interview Bob Diaco in like 5 days before I went on vacation, I would have been in a pretty sour mood those last 2 weeks because it was nothing but like relentless in news about stuff that doesn't matter to the upcoming system, mostly recruiting stuff. And it's not that I don't like recruiting stuff, but I know how the cycle works. I know it. And it's always in June. It's going to be the greatest recruiting class of all time. Nebraska has finally turned the corner.
Yep.
No one has ever it's better than it's ever been. And then in July, you have that inevitable come down.
Reality
and then as
hits,
the season starts, the inevitable questions of, well, why don't they have 18 commits? Why don't they have 22? Like that inevitable flip happens. And so I've gotten a little fatigued about knowing how the June hype cycle works. And I like it, and I like going to the camps and all that stuff. But nevertheless, it's a hype cycle. And so I was a little fatigued at the end of it. So it was good to get refreshed, get away, spend time with my family, play a lot of video games with my kids.
What's your go-to?
Well, they're 9 and 4.
Okay.
So what we do is we're not playing Call of Duty, no. We're playing Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah.
And, the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
The old school Wii. That's what we play.
I guess that is old school now, isn't it?
Oh,
that was like 2008?
Mm-hmm. Older than that, I think. So we play the old school Wii, and that is their speed. That is their speed. They like Mario Kart, and they like, Just Dance.
Nice.
And that's what they like.
Okay.
And that we're trying to keep them as innocent as possible. We took our son Sammy to his first movie. His first movie in a theater. And we waited all the way until he was 4 because he's really kind of immature. I think Mary went when she was like 2 or 3 because she was better at sitting there. But we took him to Despicable Me 3 and he loved that.
Oh. Now he has a taste for it.
Not only a taste for that. You'll learn this when you take your kids to movie theaters, which is soon, maybe in a couple of years, because you have one.
Yeah.
You got to be real smart about how you handle the movie candy and real smart about how you handle the movie popcorn. You don't want to get too big of a popcorn. You don't want to get too big of a pop. And you want to be real smart about how you handle the candy.
Right.
Because when you go into the movie theater and you go to the front and there's like 30 different things of candy there, they want all the candy. All of it. And nothing paralyzes a child more than infinite choices of candy because they feel this immediate guilt the minute they pick something. They pick the M&Ms and they feel guilty that they left the Starburst on the rack. They pick the Raisinets and know they want them. They want the junior mints. They want the they want it all. So my advice is that you tell them beforehand. Here are the candies. Pick one out. Or if your wife's got a purse, maybe you bring the candy.
Yeah,
which you're not supposed to do. But
you know, Sour Patch Kids aren't necessarily conducive to kids sitting still for 2 hours either. That's not a good thing.
They're not. But our kids love popcorn, and so you got to be real smart about how you divvy that popcorn out. And of course, movie theaters, you know, they want to charge you for almost everything. So mm-hmm. you got to try to finagle the little side paper bag and make sure it doesn't cost any money, because you know a cup there costs $49.95 just to get a cup.
Oh
that
yeah,
you can fill pop in.
I think we've all been there. I've been there in college where you know I don't want to pay $6 for a soda or whatever. So you know, you bring a can of something in, and you try to time it to where you crack it at a loud point in the show, right?
But well, you think somebody's going to go out and narc on you?
Well, maybe. You know, who knows? Their eyes.
They're all bringing stuff.
Eyes all
man.
Over the place. But, you know, so have you ever mistimed it and then just cracked that thing when it changed scenes and it was quiet and you know the whole theater was just kind of judging you in that moment?
I'm the weird dude, Evan, in that I love movies so much that two things happen. A, if I'm going with my kids, we just buy pop there. B, oftentimes I will go by myself to movies because I love them so much. And I will go to movies that a lot of people don't want to see. That's why I go by myself. And I sit in the second row. Oh, yeah.
You like to crane your neck up and...
I'm wanting an immersive experience.
Okay.
And so when you immerse yourself in the experience, you don't eat, you don't drink. You're just there to witness the art for 2 hours.
Hmm.
So I don't eat and I don't drink when it's just me.
Hmm. Okay.
It's a monastic experience.
Hmm.
And it's from the second row where no one wants to sit. Nobody wants to sit in the
second row.
That's true. Ever. But I don't go see Avatar in the theater by myself. Like, I would never see that movie unless some person in their teen years wanted to go see that with me. The movies that I will go see in the movie are like The Beguiled or Personal Shopper, or like boutique art movies.
Sure.
To which you do not want to eat food. You don't want to be stuffing your face while you're watching, you know, like Human Anguish. It feels a little think about it. How much do you really want to gorge yourself at Schindler's List?
That's true. That's a good point.
You're going to see the Avengers. You want to stuff your face. When you're going to see Schindler's List, maybe the food is a little less important because the movie on the screen is a little more important.
Yeah. Okay. So optics, appearances are a consideration for you when you're attending movies. Okay.
Well, even at home, who turns on like The Godfather and is like, boy, let me go get a bunch of candy and eat. So I come off vacation, and you experienced this last night too. The first night back.
Yeah.
Technically, I put my first day back as Sunday night, and that's when Deontay Watts, is no longer coming to Nebraska. His mom told me he doesn't want to play football anymore, and he may not play anywhere in the fall. The next night, I'm teaching my kid how to grill chicken, and he's 4, and I'm turning the chicken over on the grill while in my pocket, this is the American Sports Writer in 2017, in my pocket is my phone, which is playing Elijah Blade's Periscope event, and it's and I got my headphones in, listening to the ridiculous answers of Elijah Blade's.
Right.
Looking at these questions and being like, "Yeah, I'm still in the movement. What's going?" So you had to write this up last night. This was basically your first experience in the ridiculousness and the flakiness of college football recruiting.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
You know, it wasn't pleasant. I thought I had a Monday night. You know, I tried to do my due diligence during the day. I tried to contact Arizona Western. I reached out to Elijah Blades numerous times social media, calls, you know, texts, whatever it might have been. You don't hear anything back. You don't hear anything back. Okay, fine. You see other outlets reporting anonymous sources saying maybe he's going to Arizona Western, and then... And then you text me later in the night and say, "Hey, try Elijah Blades again." I said, "Why?"
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You send me the picture message of him saying, "Give me a reporter," and it looks like you know I just wasn't at the front of the line on that one. So I actually did get a text response, which I considered to be a minor miracle, saying he had already talked to someone else. Turned it out to be Husker Online.
Yeah,
fine, okay, and you know we wrote up something on that report, and you know we're really close to kind of concluding our business with the 2017 recruiting class.
They're all here.
Yes. So
that are going to be here. So with the exception of Keyshawn Johnson Jr. And the saga continues.
Yes. So in that sense,
chapter 9.
Let's
and of course, you follow Keyshawn on Twitter. You're like, what is going on with this dude? Like, he's talking about getting addicted and being to a good thing, or whatever. I don't know what's going on with him.
It's just this weird middle ground a lot of these guys are in, where they don't want to talk to reporters, they don't want to discuss their situation, but yet they're going to go ahead and subtweet and send out these cryptic messages,
right,
about how they're feeling and what they're doing, and really, in my opinion, what it is an attention grab, and people say, what does this mean? You know, what's he saying now? So now that a lot of this stuff has reached ahead with Blades, with Watts, it's refreshing that we can move on to other business, have like maybe the upcoming football season.
Mm-hmm. So these two kids not coming, you know, Watts was going to be a defensive end, maybe a defensive tackle. He was going to turn 20 in November, so the chances of him playing early were high because he's kind of already grown into his man's body. Blades, on the other hand, I think, as it turns out, and it seems somewhat obvious now, that Nebraska had this sort of partial qualifier plan that they wanted him to be a part of. He didn't want to be a part of it. He's going to Arizona Western of his own accord to enroll in JUCO. I don't know if he's going to be there 1 year, 2 year, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think Nebraska dodged an Elijah Blades here, because I don't think you want kids who don't want to be at Nebraska. And I don't really think that Elijah Blades wanted to be at Nebraska. He wanted to go somewhere where he could get qualified, and that happened to be Nebraska. But that coincidence is not a good enough reason for even a top 150 prospect to be at Nebraska. Because in my experience of covering the program over the course of 10 years, those dudes don't do well here, because it becomes very restless very quickly. They're like, they got to play. And they got to play right away, and they got to play a lot. And if they don't, they're going to fall into that sort of gray area that people sometimes fall into.
Right.
And I think Nebraska dodged a little bit of a Blades here, because I think you would have had a guy in the program who wouldn't necessarily want to be here. Now you've got the scholarship opened up. I understand why Nebraska wanted to take a chance on him, because he's so talented and gifted. But as I was telling you, I talk to people who I don't necessarily quote, but I talk to people out in California whose general sense of it was, they're going to take this guy? Really? This guy? And they have to be smart about how they continue to recruit kids who not only fit athletically, but also a fit for Nebraska. You got to find that. And I know it's cliched, but in some places the fit is easier. And you know, USC, a kid from almost all over America can fit there in a lot of ways. At Nebraska, you need a kid who's kind of self-motivated, who's a pretty good student, I think that helps, and is distinctive in their personality and in their approach to the game. The Amir Abdullah. I use Amir Abdullah as the template of a guy that you can sit there and say, well, look, Amir was, you know, a cornerback who was going to be a cornerback in the SEC, and he became a running back. He was a little bit undersized. He was from the South. Nebraska's the Midwest. But the core ideas about Amir Abdullah that matter were work ethic, character, toughness, unbelievable self-motivation. Those are the pieces that make great players in Nebraska. So it's not about where they come from, because Levante David was a great fit at Nebraska too, and he was all those things as well.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to find kids who have those personality traits that fit here, and I don't know if Elijah Blades was that guy.
Well, the other thing that's interesting about that is the circumstance that it played out in, right? Because how different would the reaction be without the Chris Jones news? If Chris Jones were healthy and maybe the depth was a little bit greater at corner, mm-hmm, this year, maybe people in the moment would be more willing to say, okay, he's not a fit. I feel like this situation, because of the fact that they could have used him, or he could have gotten a long look in fall camp, right?
He would have. Well, he couldn't have, because the partial qualifier plan made it impossible for him to play this year. He wasn't going to play.
Oh, yeah. But
and that's on him.
Right.
That's not on anybody else.
But Nebraska could certainly use him in the context of where its team is now.
Sure. Especially going into next year.
But I feel like with the circumstance with Chris Jones, it's just going to take people a little bit longer to realize that. You know, they know who's coming in the 2018 class, headlined by Brandon Radley Hiles. You know,
well,
there's help
he's
coming.
He's coming. I don't know if all those guys are coming.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll talk about that.
It's just interesting with how it all has played out in the last few days. Yeah, like you said, there's no downtime. This is July.
Yep.
You know, so maybe it's just a foreshadowing of what we have to come.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a good late June or July for Nebraska. It wasn't. You know, you get past the Friday Night Lights camp, which I think was really successful, but off the field with Keyshawn Johnson Jr. leaving, with Stanley Morgan getting arrested and Tony Reed getting arrested, and then Blades and Watson not making it.
Bob Elliott passing away,
which, you know, is a separate thing, and rest in peace to him and prayers to his family.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it wasn't a good time off the field. Nebraska's put only more pressure on Tanner Lee to be everything that they hope he's going to be. They've put more pressure on him to be that. They've put more pressure on a young defensive line to be elite. And they put more pressure on Mike Kavanaugh and his offensive line, which is not young. It's pretty experienced, to be the best offensive line they've had in the Big Ten era. If those three things all pan out, then I think you're in pretty good shape. If those three things don't consecutively pan out, I think you're up a creek a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, and people don't want to hear this, you're staring at 7-5. And 7-5 means 8-4, 6-6. So my range before Jones got hurt was 7-5 to 9-3. And that was the lowest range I'd had for a while. I'm looking real close. I'm thinking real hard about moving that range down to 8-4, 6-6.
Yeah.
Well, and just saying, hey, look, you be realistic that the best player on the team just got hurt and maybe out for the whole season. Be realistic about what this team can actually achieve,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to listening to the constant summer hype about everything. And it may all turn out to be true, but the constant summer hype and the content and the social media advertising, think a little bit about where this team really is going into the Big Ten media days.
Right. And I would tweak the question I asked you the other day, which was if you were a Nebraska supporter and you could take 9-3 with three blowout losses, say, you know, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and, you know, you could say Oregon or Iowa, whatever, Northwestern, pick a third game.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take that 9-3 with three blowout losses, or would you take 7-5 where every game was competitive all season? Every game, say, within 7 to 10 points. You know, because I think that's just been the thing that's really bugged Nebraska fans for a long time, is maybe they're going to win some of those toss-up games along the way, but when it comes right down to it,
right.
when it comes to the big national games, the spotlight's on you.
Right.
They've been embarrassed more often than they haven't been.
Right.
You know, Ohio State last year was the worst of that.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know that necessarily people expect the record to be great, but man, if they can be competitive, if they can show that they can hang in these games and show some discernible progress with the 2018 recruiting class, with some of the guys they've got in the 2017 class, like, as a, you know, if I were a fan, that would be what I would want as that next step, is let's be competitive,
mm-hmm.
and then hope that the record can come from there. Because, you know, I think we've all seen the empty 9-3s where, you know, they're clearly not among the elite, and they're getting embarrassed on the national stage, and it's kind of been this glass ceiling for them for a number of years now. Take that next step, be competitive. I know everyone wants to win all the games, but if you can show some progress, I think that's a big step for Riley here in year three.
Two responses. One, isn't that what they were in 2015?
Yeah.
Was anybody happy?
No.
Why?
Well, I'm trying to recall their schedule, but it wasn't.
Two games
yeah.
on that schedule. If you flip those two games, I think people were cool. Illinois and Purdue. If Nebraska beats Illinois and they beat Purdue that year, they finish 7-5 at the regular season instead of 5-7. Then they go to a bowl game and they beat UCLA and they finish 8-5. And I think everybody says, all right, they were competitive. They lost to BYU on a Hail Mary. They lost to Miami by 3. They lost to Wisconsin by two. They beat Michigan State. They lost to Northwestern. Incidentally, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Northwestern, Iowa, those are all 10-win teams. We can live with 7-5. You can't live with 5-7 because that includes losses to Illinois and Purdue.
Right.
Now, if you want to say they lose to Michigan State by a point and they beat Illinois and Purdue and they finish 6-6, I still don't think people would have been happy, but I think people would have said, we understand it.
Right.
So now you're talking about 6-6 this season. Here's the second question. Give me the six losses. What would be, in best case scenario, the six best loss they could have?
The sixth best?
No, the six best losses.
Well, you've got Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Wisconsin.
Right.
You've got Oregon.
Right.
You've got, you could say Northwestern.
There's four. Penn State, five.
Penn State, yep.
What's the sixth one?
It could be a Minnesota. You know, I'm not totally against Arkansas State, to be honest with you. I think they're a pretty darn good team.
Okay. What about Iowa?
You know, they lost a lot, but they've had Nebraska's number. It's a possibility.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say
so one of those teams.
You were to go ask a Husker fan and say, okay, Husker fan, you tell me which are the six hardest opponents on the schedule. I think they would come back to you and say, they'd say Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Oregon, Northwestern, Iowa. If you count all six of those games as losses, you lost to Iowa, Wisconsin, and Northwestern. You finished fourth in the Big Ten West. You're 6-6. Do you think Husker fans will care how close those games were if they lose at home to Iowa, Wisconsin, and Northwestern?
No.
No.
Not at 6-6.
No, they won't. So my answer to your question is, if in a vacuum, 6-6 with a bunch of close losses and a young team looks awfully good for 2018, where maybe you turn those losses into wins.
Right.
And you go 10-2. And all of a sudden, you're in the thick of it for the Big Ten title and the national title. Given the politics of Nebraska football and the different things around it and the pressure on Sean Eichhorst, who we'll talk about in a second, and the pressure on Riley, 6-6 with home losses to Northwestern, Iowa, and Wisconsin is a no-go. They can't do it.
Yeah.
It's not good. I'm not saying he would get fired. I am saying that people would be right up against the line. And they'd say, and I think what you'd hear is, you see, he's a 500 coach. That's what you'd hear. And I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying I'm reading the fan base and I'm reading what I remember about 2015. And this doesn't include you and me, but there's people in the media that will light the program on fire for 6-6. Even if the losses are close, and they will trot out Bo and 9 wins. Because even though Bo is gone, there's still people who hold a torch and a flame for that era, or hold a torch and a flame for the athletic director who hired Bo, who will say the problem here, ultimately, is anybody making the decision who isn't that AD. Or, you know, this thing needs to be restored to the House of Osborne. And until it is, It's going to be bad. So I think that's part of it. That's part of the equation and sort of the conversation.
Sure.
How do you do 6-6 and make it look good?
Well, you know, it's just like, you know, you look at a professional franchise and that has to go through a rebuild, right? Like, it's not going to happen right away. You have to have a longer term plan. And I suppose that's easier for administration to say and to cast that
right.
vision than it is for a fan base to go through that.
Or boosters,
sure. But, yeah, I mean, those...
Or people on the Board of Regents.
The players who are going to be seniors and juniors, I mean, those classes weren't exactly heralded, right? So you have to
do your
due diligence. You have to get to that point. You have to give him a chance. I get what you're saying, that 6-6 in the short term would be met with hostility. But
well, I think if you go 9-3 and you lose by 30 to Ohio State and 30 to Wisconsin and 30 to somebody else, it still means, let's say you lose by 30 to Penn State. So Penn State, Wisconsin, and, you know, let's say you lose by 30 to Penn State, 30 to Ohio State, and 10 by Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You're still saying that season you beat Iowa and you beat Oregon and Northwestern.
Yeah.
That ain't half bad.
True.
I mean, that's not... That's nothing to shake a stick at. In a funny way, Penn State becomes an advantage for Nebraska, even though they're a much harder team than the team that they replaced, which is Indiana or Maryland, if you prefer. But I say Rutgers swaps out with Maryland. The road game this year in the Big Ten East will be at Indiana, or at Penn State as opposed to at Indiana.
Right.
Penn State being on the schedule actually does Nebraska a favor in a funny way. Because if I throw out 9-3, then that means you're giving me a win over either Wisconsin or Iowa or Ohio State. Because you can't lose to all three of those teams and lose to Penn State at the same time, because that's four losses.
Right.
So if you tell me, hey, you're going to lose at Penn State and you're going to lose two more, then what you're telling me is, but you're going to beat Wisconsin, Iowa, or Ohio State. I think fans could live with that. Especially if it's Wisconsin. Like, oh,
yeah, if it's Wisconsin,
we're going to lose to Iowa, but we're going to beat Wisconsin? Okay. That's why I think 9-3 is more acceptable, even if there's blowouts, because you can cross one of the blowouts as at Penn State. Well, hey, Big Ten champs, they're a great team, out in the middle of November, cross that off. That sucked. But that means you beat somebody else at home that you wanted to beat.
I suppose it depends on what you're talking about the end goal being. If the end goal is to be nationally relevant and get back into the college football playoff, then I want to see Nebraska contending with all those teams. Mm-hmm. If the goal is to be competitive in the Big Ten and take a step toward being back in the Big Ten title game, winning a Big Ten title, then your proposition of 9-3 is probably that next step.
I think you have just described the dilemma that I have often talked about when I talk about what do Husker fans really want. And I asked this question back in 2015, and I'll ask it again to fans. What do they really want? Do they want a team that does what you're talking about, that goes 6-6, but the larger goal is 1 year away? Or is it the team that goes 8-4 or 9-3, but gets blown out? Because that's what they had in the Bo Pelini era.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo Pelini knew that it drove the fans mad that he'd get blown out, and it drove him mad that it drove them mad. And so as a result, he blew up a lot.
Yeah.
Because their standards were too frustrating and too high for him to achieve. The challenge now is there's a lot of people that are like, well, hey, I'll go back to 9-3. It's better than 6-6. We can't, this Purdue and Illinois, we can't lose to Purdue and Illinois. And so I think that's part of the challenge going ahead. Like, how do you parse out those wins and those losses, and what do Nebraska fans want? And so, like, if you were to say to a Nebraska fan, look, we're going to give you, 3 years of 500 ball, but at the end of it, you're going to get a team that wins 12 and goes to the playoff. Or we're going to give you 4 seasons of 8-10 wins that never makes the playoff. Which mm-hmm. would you take? Which would you take?
Well, the first team you're describing is basically Iowa. They have their undefeated regular season.
Correct.
They go to a New Year's Six Bowl every few years. I would probably take that team, to be honest with you. I want to be nationally relevant at some point. They played in the Rose Bowl a few years ago.
Right. Didn't play well.
No, they certainly did not.
Yeah.
But they got there. They were 12-0. They were a goal line stand away from winning the Big Ten.
Yep.
And fans can remember those moments. They can remember where they were when Iowa went 12-0, when they did this and that. You go 8-4, 9-3, Nebraska has some moments in the last 10 years, but what's really that big, euphoric moment that Nebraska can say, yes, this was that season. Remember that season? Remember that game? They've had some fun games, but in the bigger picture, it hasn't really amounted to much.
Right. The euphoria was taken from them to some degree in the 2009 title game.
Yeah.
The coaches took it from themselves in the 2010 title game. And in the 2012 game, they were just run over.
Right.
Yeah.
So
those are the three games that you point to that you really are like, you circle and you say. And then the game at Wisconsin last year, which I don't know if you watched that game live.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched it several times since, and I've thought a lot about that, standing down on the sidelines in that final minute, watching that drive and standing next to a couple of Nebraska officials and saying, this is it. I mean, if they finish this is a completely different season and a completely different team if they can finish this. And I remember looking at the expression on one of those officials' faces. It was third down and whatever. And just the look when Tommy decided to chuck it, you know, deep instead of throwing short and making a manageable fourth down, like maybe a fourth and four. That look, and he just turned to me and said, not ideal. You know, and so I think Nebraska fans have really been waiting for that moment. And, yeah, it hasn't come up for them. This creates a kind of whatever for the football team, but it's also true of the entire athletic department, that in Big Ten era they have not necessarily had a lot of big moments. They've had a few. But you talked to Sean Eichhorst about that and about their finish this year. This is probably the biggest struggle that they've had in the Big Ten in the major men's sports since they arrived, with maybe the exception of baseball.
Yeah, and the narrative there is very similar to what we're talking about with the football team, where even this year, you know, Nebraska baseball, they win 2 out of 3 at Penn State to close the regular season. They win the Big Ten regular season championship. They haven't been, or, you know, they hadn't won a baseball title since 2005. They hadn't won any kind of a men's conference title since they've been in the Big Ten in their sixth year. You know, and again, it's like you have that moment of euphoria. They have the moment where Darren Erstad's running into the clubhouse afterwards and the players surround him and they're throwing water and they're yelling and they're jumping. And it was a big breakthrough moment for them at the time. And how do they follow it up? They go 1-2 in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah,
they
go great, wasn't it?
They go 0-2 in the NCAA regional, losing to Yale and Holy Cross. They don't get a shot at Oregon State. And that's it. And it's like, how do you judge that season? How do you judge their last few seasons where over the course of a few months they've done well enough to make the NCAA tournament, right, which is an accomplishment for a Northern school and something they haven't really done consistently since the College World Series teams in the mid-2000s. But then on the other hand, you weigh that against just total flops in the postseason. You know, not only are they losing games, they're not playing well. The hitting disappears. The pitching is erratic. I talked to Sean Eichhorst about that, and his response with regards to baseball was essentially stick to the process. You know, we've seen it play out over the course of a season. Those postseason wins will come.
Right.
So, you know, that's how he sees it. I know, having covered the team this year, that Coach Erstad would say it's just a matter of hitting, and sometimes in baseball you get hot, sometimes you don't.
Matter of having better players.
Right. I think
it is,
so.
Really.
You know, you look at the recruiting rankings and
come on, Darren.
The recruiting rankings
aren't
what they want to be.
but that
fits into, you know, what Eichhorst talks about with his model of building any program, with, you know, recruiting elite student athletes, bringing in top-notch coaches, and then surrounding them with support, academic facilities, whatever it might be, fan support.
You live in Council Bluffs for how many years?
For 8 years.
8 years. Okay, so you were working over at the Nonpareil. Mm-hmm. What was your impression? You're a graduate of Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So what was your impression of Nebraska athletics in those 8 years, and how did it maybe change from the time when you moved to Council Bluffs till the time you moved back to Lincoln? Because you were, you know, Lincoln native, you grew up, you went to the university there, sports center at the RAG, Dale, Nebraska.
That's right.
But when you left, and then you were like outside looking in, both as a fan and as a journalist, not covering Nebraska.
Yeah.
What was your general impression of how things were going, and did it change as time went on?
Well, I think the term fishbowl really started to resonate with me a little bit, because when you're in it, that's what you know. You know,
right,
it's Nebraska athletics, and everyone in Lincoln and in Omaha mostly, that's what the focus is, and that's
right,
what the scrutiny is. And so, yeah, in Council Bluffs, it's a very maybe confused region. You've got your Iowa fans, your Iowa State fans, your Nebraska fans.
I'm sure they would appreciate that description.
You know, you've got a few Creighton fans.
Council Bluffs is confused.
Not just Council Bluffs.
Life
but
in
Southwest
this town
Iowa
is pretty confusing.
There's no solid allegiance to any program.
Okay.
So Nebraska is one of those.
It's not
sure.
Hawkeye. It's not Hawkeye country.
You know, it's a mix. All kinds of stuff.
Poor Cyclone. There's no Cyclone fans, though, right?
Yeah, they're fewer and farther between.
Okay.
Yes. But, you know, it didn't seem like as big a deal, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Nebraska athletics, like, they just, in a way, they blended in. You know, what they were doing, you know, we followed all those teams over there. What Nebraska athletics were doing the last 8 years, from that vantage point, really wasn't much different from right. what Iowa was doing at all. In fact, it was very similar in most regards. You know, the volleyball team obviously has kept its sustained success going for decades now. But as far as your higher profile sports, there's just not a lot to get excited about on a national level, on a level where if you don't live there and you don't have a rooting interest, you know, what are you looking at? And with Nebraska, there wasn't a lot. Mostly it was angst over the football team.
Yep. I think, and I've said this before, that, like, I think that Nebraska being in Lincoln and not having to interact a great deal or sort of, you know, interact with other university programs or compete for the dollar and for attention, I think sometimes it can create a bubble down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a sense of and this includes with the media, which is why I'm glad I work for the Omaha World Herald. I'm not trying to, like, you know, stump for our paper, but I appreciate the fact that I can crack open the paper and it's not all Nebraska. Or I can go to a website, our website, and it's not all Nebraska. And it's not all Nebraska obsessed. Mm-hmm. Like, I can look at other programs and see their coaches and see things that are successful. I can pay attention because we cover the Royals, both the Storm Chasers and the Kansas City Royals. And I can look at the way that Dayton Moore has put together that franchise and got them to back-to-back World Series and won a World Series, which is like winning a national championship, and say, okay. Like, there's people who actually know what they're doing that Nebraska's not doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Royals figuring out a way to win despite not having the best players or having the best offense and playing in a park that wasn't conducive to offense. Figuring out a way to do that and achieve it in a different way than other teams were trying. I like that aspect of working here because I feel like it gives me not necessarily a cynicism about Nebraska athletics, but a reality
mm-hmm.
of, like, down there they think it, like, that all the solutions that they need are right there. And I don't think that's true. And I don't think that Riley believes that. I don't think Eichhorst believes it. I think Eichhorst and Riley are very big picture thinkers, and I think they want voices and they want resources and they want different ideas in the room, and that's something that I appreciate about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, you know, the mindset is, well, look, we just got to do it the way we used to do it, and if we do it the way we used to do it, it'll be fine. And honestly, that may be true for Nebraska football. I don't know that it isn't true, but it certainly isn't true for a lot of the other sports down there that weren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't just Dave Van Horn it. You can't just go, hey, just do it the way Dave Van Horn did it. Well, you know what? Maybe he did some things that were endemic to Dave Van Horn that you can't just reproduce like a template.
Right.
You have to find new ways. You can't just do it, or you can't just do it the way Tom Osborne did it. He was Tom Osborne, right? There's that line from the movie Steve Jobs. I don't know if you've seen that movie. Have you seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie.
I would. It's great.
Okay.
But Steve Jobs says to Steve Wozniak, right? Or I don't know if it's Steve Wozniak, but Steve Jobs says to Woz. He goes, you know, John Lennon was John Lennon because he was John. John was John because he was John.
Yeah.
And Tom was Tom because he was Tom.
Right.
It really, you can't just replicate the Osborne-ness of him and just say, okay, do it the way he did it. Like, it doesn't work because he was a specific person and he had a specific template and a specific culture at that specific time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a better system that isn't necessarily borrowed from him
mm-hmm.
because he picked the right system for his time. It may not necessarily be the right system for this time. And I think Nebraska athletics struggles with that, and there's sort of this internal thought process of, like, Eichhorst trying to take them in a new direction, and then these other people thinking, well, what's wrong with going back to 25 years ago when we won all the time in the 90s?
Right. Well, but how do you do that? How do you go back to 25 years ago?
I don't think you can't.
No, it's a different era in so many ways. You know, Nebraska games were televised more than many programs back then. That playing field is leveled. You know, the walk-on program is different. There are more teams out there that are offering scholarships.
Weren't in the Big Ten.
True.
And I'm telling you, that's one of the biggest issues at hand, because Nebraska football in the 1990s and 80s and 70s, Oklahoma and Nebraska were so physically dominant over so many of their opponents, especially in the 90s, that they could go and they could go whip Kansas and Iowa State and Missouri and Texas Tech and Texas A&M, who didn't have the big, powerful boys that Nebraska did. Now in the Big Ten, you have to win the Big Ten. You don't just play them one time in a bowl game a month after the season when everybody's healthy. You have to play it week after week after week. And if there's one thing the Big Ten is, it's big, and it's tough, and it's physical. And Nebraska's physicality piece hasn't been as impressive as some of their counterparts.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you can talk about identity and what makes Nebraska distinct. And I think off the field, they've done a very good job of that, you know, with the academic side of things. You know, with all the talk about if you get a parent of a recruit on campus, you're going to sell that parent because you're going to show them all the ways that they're going to get academic support, how they're going to get job placements afterwards. You know, they have some unique opportunities that way for student athletes. But then you get on the field, and especially with football, what's Nebraska's identity? You know, the social media thing's pretty good. The summer camps
doesn't win you football games.
No, absolutely. Right? The summer camps are fun, and Riley and company are leveraging Nebraska fans' passion as best they can when it comes to recruiting. But on the field, what's their identity? You know, they're not. Can you say they're a run team? Can you say they're a pass team? Is it in their defense? What do they have to fall back on? You know, what can they in crunch time count on most about their team right now in the last few years? I don't know. What would you say?
It used to be, and people always talk to me about it, it was a defender of Tim Beck, and there's a lot of Tim Beck critics out there. It used to be that their offense could pull a game out of its rear end. That's how it happened. It happened in 2012, definitely. I mean, they used to be able to say, we're going to run a no-huddle, run-based offense that tries to get big plays. And that's what they did. And their defense never did figure itself out in the Big Ten. But the offense actually bailed them out of quite a few games. And people didn't like it. They didn't like the offense. And I still contend it might have been one of the best choices that Bo Pelini made in his entire career at Nebraska, was switching the offense. People hate hearing it. No. They're going back to this offense with Tanner Lee and the pro-style stuff because that's better. And I'm like, well, it can be better if you have all the pieces and you put it all together. But for what Nebraska had at the time, no, they did the right thing. Because everybody saw how the 09 offense cost Nebraska a Big 10 championship or Big 12 championship. They weren't about to do that again in 2010. And but anyway, you know, we can go off into diversions and sidetracks about that. But I think that the overall conversation about Nebraska athletics, and has been for a while, is they need something other than volleyball to really stand out and become elite. Because you know John Cook's going to do it. Part of it's because they got it rolling there, and all the girls want to come play there because Nebraska is an elite school, and they treat them really well, and they got great fans and all the rest.
And the state of Nebraska is a fertile volleyball.
That's correct.
Recruiting ground, too.
And that's because Terry Pettit, many, many years ago, made sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
He made sure of that.
Yeah.
No question about it. So Terry should earn a lot of the credit for what they're doing now, but Cook's done things in the right way and has taken over the mantle and certainly has earned a lot of respect and cachet in the state and has earned every bit of it, deserves it. So, but I think they need something else to step up, to be notable.
And it would have to be certain things, right? I mean, the bowling team's doing its job. The rifle team's doing its job.
Yeah.
So you're talking one of the basketball teams, men's basketball.
Yeah.
Football.
Well, both of those.
Baseball, essentially.
I'm not going to speak to the rifle team. I don't know. But the bowling team is great. I think Nebraska has certain advantages being part of a major public university that some of the other schools don't. So what I'm saying is if Michigan decided to start a women's bowling team, they'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
And they'd probably be pretty good fast. And we saw this, incidentally, we saw this with the Nebraska women's soccer team back in the 90s. They were really good for about 5 or 6 years, and then their Canadian pipeline got shut down because all those players started going other places when they started women's soccer programs because they needed to be Title IX compliant, which is why Nebraska started. One of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that Nebraska started a women's soccer program was for Title IX compliance, right? They wanted to be in, you know, all that. Or at least that's my recollection. It was my first year of college. I was a little foggy back then. But the point being that Nebraska soccer was great for 5 years, and then once all these other schools started beefing up their women's soccer programs, it became a hell of a lot harder to be great. The same thing happened in Big Ten baseball. Nebraska switches to the Big Ten, and that's exactly the time the Big Ten starts to give a crap.
It's true.
That's when they finally start to make an investment in their baseball programs. So when you might have been able to steal that dude out of Illinois, now he's going to Illinois.
Right.
Because they got a nice park.
Yeah, even Ben Miller, you know, who just graduated from Nebraska. He was one of their top hitters for a couple of years. It just so he only ended up at Nebraska because Iowa was making a coaching change.
Right.
And, you know, Rick Heller had wanted him, but he got on the scene too late in his first year in 2012, I think it was. So it's hard. Yeah. And
it's only going to get harder.
Absolutely. It's competitive today. It's with all the social media and access and information that's out there. Finding an edge is just that much more difficult.
Well, we've thoroughly depressed people now for the last 15 minutes. We're going into a golden era of Big Ten football. That's hard for people to understand. I try to tell people that often, that the Big Ten in football is going to supplant eventually the SEC. That the SEC, while will always be excellent, the Big Ten now has enough money to create strength top to bottom in the league. They're all going to have the bells and whistles. They're all going to be able to recruit better. They're never going to be in the top 25 in recruiting. You're never going to have 10 teams in the top 25. But, you know, whereas Indiana or let's say, Purdue used to recruit the 78th best team or, you know, recruiting class. Now they're going to be 43rd. And Indiana might have been 65. Now they're going to be 37th. Maryland used to be 61. Now they're going to be 29. And you're going to see the incremental improvements. And then you're going to see all the coaching kick in. Because there's a lot better coaching in the Big Ten than there tends to be in the SEC. Because the SEC is such a recruiting league that they hire a lot of really young coaches whose job it is to recruit kids.
Right.
And they're not street agents. But they're more like basketball assistants than they are, well, I've coached this position for 9 years and my guys are gonna get better. It's like I'm gonna bring in two top 100 guys. And I'm a player's coach, and they're gonna look at me and like me, and their technique may not be great, but they're great athletes.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So the Big Ten's gonna inch closer and closer and closer to the SEC, and Nebraska is gonna be in that league, and it's gonna get better and better and better and better. And just wait until Iowa switches over its coach, because that'll happen.
Yeah.
One day, Iowa will switch. Kirk Ferentz is a great coach of technique and a good developer of young men and players. But wait until they get somebody who can actually recruit.
Yeah, that'll be different.
Right.
Yeah, there's probably more of a tilt toward recruiting than there is player development, if essentially is what you're saying.
Well, I think you've been to Iowa. You've seen their new facility.
Oh, right? Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. If you look at Iowa's new facilities, mm-hmm. they're as nice as Nebraska's. Their stadium isn't as cool, but I like their stadium.
It's clean.
But their indoor practice facility is cool. It's good. It's just as good as Nebraska's. Their football building and their meeting rooms are cool. They're just as good as Nebraska's. Their weight room is just as good as Nebraska's. They recruit like it's still, 2006 and they've got the bubble. Like, they recruit, they're very modest in their aims.
Yeah.
Wait till they get a guy in there, like a Stoops Light or something. A 39-year-old guy that's like, screw it. We're getting everybody.
Right.
We're going into Chicago and getting the three best players in that city. Wait until they get dudes.
Yeah.
They're going to be hard to beat. People think, watch Minnesota. Watch P.J. Fleck. Watch him recruit to that city.
Yeah.
It'll be a whole different baby.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Because Jerry Kill and Tracy Clay is nice developmental coaches, not great recruiters. P.J. Fleck will recruit.
Hmm.
So Nebraska is going to be faced with its own, not mortality, but it's going to have to face its own weaknesses in ways that the 2011, 2012, 2013, even 2014 teams didn't have to face. The salad days of Nebraska and the Big Ten are over. They're over. I'm telling you. That's one of the things that Bo Blue is that he needed to take advantage early, and he didn't do it. He was not able to do it because the Big Ten was not very good when Nebraska joined it. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
Best team in the league went 10-3. That was Wisconsin. But they weren't very good. The Big Ten was not very good when they joined. And that inflated the records. It made them better than they actually were. And you know who else is going to see a resulting drop? Michigan State. So instead of Nebraska being the team that capitalized on the relative mediocrity of the Big Ten, Michigan sucking, for Penn State coming off of sanctions, whatever, should have been Nebraska. It was Michigan State.
Yeah.
Now, Michigan State is going to be faced with its own mortality as well. They went 4-8 last year. They'll be lucky to go 6-6 this year.
Yeah.
And D'Antonio will have about a year after that. But credit to Michigan State. Bravo to the Spartans for taking advantage of that short window when the Big Ten couldn't get its act together.
Yeah. Well, speaking of depressing. yeah, this would be that.
No, but I mean, you know, that's part of what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm telling this to people because I want Nebraska fans to be realistic heading into this season. Because it could be at times a little rocky.
Yeah. Can you recall a season that has so many possible outcomes?
Yeah, no. Not recently.
You know? It's such so many possible outcomes either way.
Maybe 08.
Could be a disaster of a season. It could be pretty good if everything breaks right.
If they go 10-2, then Riley's coach of the year.
Yeah.
No question. That and Tanner Lee better be right up there for Big Ten Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Because so much is dependent on Tanner. And Bob Diaco better be up for the Borrells Award again. I'm telling you, those three dudes, if they go 10-2, those three dudes will have done their jobs. And they will have done them magnificently.
Yeah.
So credit ahead of time. If they're able to go 10-2, those three guys will have done some stuff.
Right.
And they will be adequately rewarded. Big Ten Media Days is next week. You have never been, is that correct?
That is correct.
What are you expecting? Who are you excited to talk to, coaching wise? Who are you excited to meet or talk to or see speak?
You know, PJ Fleck, I think he seems like an interesting character. I'd like to meet him.
Okay.
You know, Harbaugh, of course.
Okay.
You know, Urban Meyer. Just for what he's done and what he's accomplished, and mm-hmm. seems like a straightforward guy. And I've heard great things about Pat Fitzgerald also.
Yeah, good dude.
So, you know, just kind of dive in and see what happens. I'm expecting a circus, and I'm sure it'll be all that.
The first Big Ten Media Days that I went to was in 2011. And I have to tell this story because that was the first year Nebraska was in the Big Ten, and they were going to unveil this trophy. The Heroes Trophy or mm-hmm. whatever, except they didn't unveil it, but they just said that what they were going to call it. And it was the Friday morning before the roundtables. And the press conference was at 8 a.m. and it was in the McCormick Place, except that it was on the opposite end of the hotel. So the hotel is on one end, and McCormick Place is this giant convention center, bigger than any really in America. And so I woke up at like 6 a.m., took a train from Chinatown, because there's a Chinatown in Chicago, took a train to McCormick Place, went in the wrong entrance, and walked for what was the equivalent of about 9 football fields. It felt like that. I'm pretty sure it was, too. I walked up 2 non-functioning escalators. And they were big. they were like the triple-decker escalator. Have you ever walked up a non-functioning escalator?
Yeah, you're just missing out. It's like,
it sucks.
I could just be standing here, but I'm walking.
It's not. Here's the thing about an escalator, all right? When it's a non-functioning escalator, it's way worse than a set of stairs. Because a set of stairs has eroded to the point where you feel like you can grab a railing and you can run up the thing. And if you slip, maybe you hit a knee. If you run up a non-functioning escalator and you slip, you're going to die. Or at least you think you're going to die, because if you fall and your head hits the escalator, it's going to break open. Or you're going to tumble down the escalator.
Maybe the question is, why did you feel the need to run up the
escalator? I didn't, but it would have been nice to be able to run up them. Wouldn't it be nice?
I don't know. I don't mind just walking upstairs. Like, what were you just, you know?
I'm going to show you these escalators. They're like triple-decker escalators.
Okay.
It was like walking up to God.
Except instead of God, it was Big Ten Media Days.
Yeah.
Huh.
It was like walking.
A disappointment.
And walking and walking. And it's just so much more defeating when it's an escalator, because your expectation of an escalator is that it's going to move.
Sure.
So when you see stairs, you're like, oh, stairs. But when you see an escalator, you're like, oh, escalator. And then you get up to it and it's not moving and you're like, oh, no.
Sure. We've all been there as kids.
I have to walk up this?
Yeah.
And then you have that urge to run because who wants to spend 2 minutes on a non-functioning escalator? Except you're afraid to run because you might think you'll get killed.
So is there more to this story or did it?
It doesn't get a whole lot better, but I finally get there and of course I'm fat. So I'm drenched in sweat at this point. It's like 8:02 and I'm drenched in sweat and they want something. Cause this is back when they still had I think this is like the last year they had the Metro edition. And so we had to get something into the Metro edition, which came out in the afternoon. It was like 10 a.m. And so I'm just drenched in sweat. And I walk into this press conference, and Osborne's there, and Iowa's AD is there, and Hy-Vee is there, and a bunch of other people. And I'm like, I am so tired. I'm so exhausted. And it might have been like 7 a.m. or something. And I'm like, just please get me to the nearest glass of water. Because the place is not functioning. Everything's shut down. It's like walking through, you know, the movie I Am Legend. And so you go in there, and I'm just like, oh, and I'm just dying. And then they don't even unveil the trophy design, I don't think. I think they just said, it's going to be called the Heroes Trophy. And they didn't show, like, the design. And everybody's like, oh, it's going to be a big trophy game, you know? And it's like, oh, it's Nebraska's first trophy game. Now that they don't play Missouri anymore, what's it going to be? And, you know, Chattel was like, it needs to be a corn belt. And, you know, other people are like, oh, it needs to be a harp or whatever, you know? It needs to be a thing of the Missouri River or whatever. Yeah. And they's like, it's going to be a, you know, it's a press release trophy. It's like, we're going to honor humanity. Kind of like a couple years ago when the Iowa State Cy-Hawk trophy was for about a half hour, that ridiculous dude pulling the corn, corn bounty out of the thing and handing the corn to the child.
That's awesome.
Like, trophy games need to be something like bizarre. They should never be like, and of course, Nebraska's trophies are Heroes. What's the one for Wisconsin? The Humanity.
Yeah,
I don't even know what it is.
Nats.
And it's like 900 pounds.
I remember the Fopolini bits of broken chair trophy for the Minnesota game.
That got taken away.
Yeah.
They discontinued it. So anyway, yeah. McCormick Place is giant. There's a lot of coaches. You talk to a lot of people. At the end of it, you kind of feel like your head spins and then you eat some deep bitch pizza.
So at least it ends well.
Do you like eat deep dish pizza?
You know, I'm more of a thin crust guy personally, but
of course.
But you know, when in Rome, right? So we'll give it a try, I'm sure.
You like thin crust pizza? You mean like New York style pizza?
Yeah.
Or like St. Louis style pizza?
No, more like New York style.
Cracker crust.
No.
All right.
Gotta have some substance, but not so much to where it like expands when it's inside you after you've eaten it. It's like you've eaten one piece and you're full, and then 10 minutes later you're really, really full.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're a Cubs fan. You gonna go to the Cubs game?
I'm gonna go to Wrigleyville. I don't know if I'm gonna go to the actual game, but that should be fun. I haven't been since they took home the old title last year. So
they're having a good year.
They're okay.
Right. No, they're not good at all.
They're 500. They
should be a lot better.
They're a few
than
games
they
are. Behind. Oh, agreed. Agreed. But you know, they just anyway. We could go down that road, but
they should be the Dodgers, and they're not.
Hey, they got the title, man. Hey. It takes a whole lot of pressure off this year. I still feel like they'll make a run, but if they don't, they're the defending World Series champs.
Right. It happened once in your lifetime, just like with me and the Bears. All right. We've spent enough time talking on this podcast. Sorry for Sasha having to sit back there. It's been like an hour and a half. A good chunk of this was fairly depressing, but let me again point out the takeaway of, like, be realistic on this season. I cover it. We're close to it. We see there's going to be a lot of great stories within this team. But I think this team's going to have to try awful, awful hard and have special chemistry to be great. And if they do have those things, this will be a season to remember. Because if they're able to go 10-2 or 11-1, which would be off the charts great.
Oh, my.
Then yeah. This will be one of the great – this will be the best Nebraska team they've had really since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're able to pull that off, then that would be a pretty amazing story that Riley would be able to pull off. Not sure that's going to happen. But we'll see. All right. Thanks. Thanks for listening to this Pick Six podcast. We'll be back in an indeterminate period of time to talk about Husker camp. Maybe next week. Maybe not. Thanks.